You are listening to the Horse Radio Network, part of the Equine Network family.
Welcome to the Dressage Today podcast. This month, Aviva and I get the pleasure of interviewing Jennifer Mutchler, who was nominated for the Unsung Hero, and she is our second one for the year. So we hope you enjoy getting to hear a little bit about Jennifer. To give you a bio for her, she is a USDF gold, silver, and bronze medalist, and she's competed throughout her region in dressage, as well as participating in breed shows and several different types of warm blood inspections. Her passion has always been for dressage, but she enjoys applying her knowledge to other disciplines as well. She's trained with many, many top riders, including Nicole Uphoff, which we will talk about in the interview. She and her husband currently reside in Catlett, Virginia, where her business focuses on dressage lessons and training, a few select sales projects, and breeding a few warm blood foals each year. So we hope you enjoy getting to know Jennifer a little bit more. We always love to hear any feedback you have on the interview, and we welcome questions. In addition to that, if you have any judging questions for Aviva for our Ask the L segment, feel free to email us at the addresses provided in the transcript. Always remember, if you like what we are doing, make sure to subscribe, hit the like button, and share with your friends.
And now a word from our sponsor. Great partnerships are built on trust, and that's foundational at Tribute Equine Nutrition. As a family-owned company safely making their feeds right here in the USA, they're celebrating America's 250th anniversary by giving back through horses. Every bag of Tribute sold helps support PATH International's Equine Services for Heroes programs, serving veterans through the healing power of horses. Plus, their limited edition patriotic horse treats are here for summer. New to Tribute? Get a free personalized feeding plan and your first bag free at TributeEquineNutrition.com.
This month's episode is sponsored by Tribute Equine Nutrition, KPP Nalox Advanced, and Farnam Endure Gold Fly Spray.
Aviva, well, we have three sponsors. Dude, we must be doing something right.
That's amazing. That's
well, good
amazing.
For us.
Yeah. I'm excited for our interview this month with Jennifer Mutchler. She was our next unsung hero. That's our new name for our hometown heroes. And I think it's much more applicable.
Yeah.
I'm looking forward to sharing that with everybody. And I'll apologize for all the background noise on my end. I am in an airport in the United Club Lounge, but I have to tell you, I used my one-time pass.
Uh-huh.
Dude, I think I'm going to have to do this more often. This is pretty swanky up here. They have food and free coffee and everything. I'm going to be highly caffeinated by the time I get on my next plane.
Where are you going?
I'm going to Big Timber through Bozeman. It's a new clinic. Some of the people that I know from Bozeman. So it'll be some old friends and some new friends seen.
So Montana.
Montana. Yep.
Awesome.
Yep. Yes.
Sounds
yes,
fun.
Yes. Yes.
Yeah. So you're busy. So you did your webinar last week, right?
We did the live webinar, the Rider Biomechanics 101. I didn't burp or anything on screen. I did say
good.
Underpants on a live webinar.
Yeah. That's not a bad word. It's okay.
It's not a bad word. It was a little weird because, you know, when you and I are talking or when we're interviewing, we see the other person.
Yeah.
And so the only person, while I was talking to a bunch of people, the only person I could see was the person moderating. And so that was a little unnerving at first.
Oh, I'm sure.
But, you know, it went well. We had some great questions submitted, including a couple from some of my own peoples, which I really appreciate that. Support
nice.
Is always good. So I think it went off, you know, I think it went off pretty well. So,
excellent.
Yeah. Yeah.
You wanted to do something a little different this month besides our usual informative Ask the L question. Tell me about it.
I'm really excited. You know, it's always so impressive to me when people make the effort to track me down for whatever reason. And I got an email from one of our listeners asking for clarification about something that I had said on one of the podcasts.
Okay.
And she was asking for a little bit of clarification of when I said that I could tell, generally could tell the difference between a professional and an amateur in the ring. Mm-hmm. She said, you know, can I expand on that a little bit more? And I'm glad she asked the question because in retrospect, I think it might have come out a little bit on the snarky side, which I did not intend at all. What I was trying to say, and this is more true of the lower levels, is that the things that I'm always harping about in the Ask the L, you know, what do I talk about? I talk about accuracy. I talk about planning and being ready for movements, for changes of gates, for, you know, bend, all of those kinds of things. And I think that the difference that I see between pros and adult amateurs, is that pros do seem to have a better sense of planning and using the arena than amateurs do. You know, I ask a lot of my students, how do you learn your test? And they say, well, it's a pattern. You know, I go down center line and then I turn right and then I make a circle in the middle. And I say, you know, that's probably not the best way to learn your test. How about if you say, I'm heading down center line. I'm thinking about keeping my horse between my leg and my seat and my hand aids. I'm staring at the judge. And then I'm doing that deep breath in preparation with a half halt for my halt. So that you're actually really thinking about everything that you're doing. Because if all you think about is, I'm going to turn right and make a circle, the chances are pretty good that you're not going to prepare for that turn.
Right.
Or you may prepare for that turn, but you're not going to prepare for your corner. Right. And you're not going to be thinking about your bend on the circle necessarily. And you may not be thinking about the fact that, ooh, after this circle, I'm going to have to do a transition and be preparing for that. And what I see is that pros do have a tendency to do that. You know, there is an attention to detail. There is a quest for perfection. There are obviously amateurs who are that, you know, careful and considerate and everything else. But, you know, to see that at intro, to see that at training level, to see that at first level is a little bit, less usual in the amateur rider.
I think that makes a lot of sense. Yes.
Yeah. You know, and, you know, you want to, part of the question that this person asked also was about, how to best use your time before the bell rings. And we've talked about that before, but she wasn't talking about, you know, getting your horse in front of your leg or doing a couple of half halts or making sure your horse has seen the judge's booth from both eyes. She was talking about how do you, on the off chance that the judge happens to be looking up because, you know, frequently they're doing the further remarks, so they aren't watching you. But on the off chance that they're looking up, you know, do you want to do your fancy trot down the long side? Do you want to, you know, show off a little bit? Do you want to do a transition or to, you know, kind of signal your preparation and your professionalism, you know, towards the test? And, you know, I think all of that is good. I think that the time outside the arena is the time that the rider needs to tune into her horse. And that you need to do whatever is appropriate for your horse. But sometimes, you know, riding that fancy trot down the long side is what gets your horse in front of the leg. And if incidentally you look really fancy doing it, you know, go for it. you know, when you come down center line, that is the judge's, technically is the judge's first look at you. So when the bell rings, people who are experienced in the show ring, take a breath. They know they've got time. 45 seconds is a really long time. Count it sometime. And they don't just suddenly run down the center line because, oh my God, they've got to get in the ring. And, you know, if A is set up in such a way that you have to kind of zigzag around it, that maybe the way that you do it is out of a half circle or from a leg yield or whatever, because that's the way that you let the judge know, look at me, I'm coming down center line, you want to watch me because I got the stuff, you know? So,
well,
hopefully that's a clarification for what I said.
Yeah, and I'm going to say, I don't think that you came across as snarky. I like that somebody picked up on it and had a question about it. But if you think about it, I've ridden thousands of training level tests.
Mm-hmm.
And so, and there are people that have ridden more than I have. And so it's kind of ingrained in you, all of those things that you are talking about somebody doing or not doing. I think a professional is going to kind of have that ingrained in their DNA. They may not even be thinking about it, or certain things come more easily and they know that they've got to prepare better for their canter to part on this particular horse. So I think what it boils down to is experience that gives you the ability to know how to do your test in more than just a pattern, as you were saying.
And I think that experience is the word. You know, I think that pros tend to have more experience than amateurs do. And the experience in the ring shows. The experience riding well in the ring shows, as opposed to, you know, getting through it. Because I know that before I started in the L program, and the reason that I started the L program was that I had a really nice horse and I was always last. And I didn't understand why I was always last, because I had a really nice horse. And what I learned in the L program was a really average horse can beat my horse, because the really average horse is riding a straight line and has correct bend and rides through corners. And all those things that I talk about all the time, because it does separate people out. And you know, dressage is really hard, and it's really, and it's really technical. And the reason that riding at a show is even more difficult is that not only do you have to ride the test, whatever that is, but you also have to ride your horse, and you have to be able to multitask, because, you know, my horse may find upward canter transitions perfectly easy and wonderful. But the trot walk transition is complicated. So I need to be aware of, I'm doing a canter transition, no big deal, but now I'm trotting and I'm going to need to walk. And that's going to take preparation on my part. And this is what I need to do to make it be a seamless transition. So it's a different, I think it's a different way of presenting. And again, I think it has a lot to do with experience. I think it has a lot to do with professionalism. You know, if you, one of the things that I say to a lot of people when I have the opportunity to chat with them after rides is the reason that accuracy is important is, number one, it shows the judge that you can do it, where you're supposed to. But also, as you move up the levels, things happen much more quickly. And by the time you get to the FEI level, if you mess up a transition, you have now messed up potentially three movements, because you've got to get whatever gait it was, you've got to get it established, and you've got to be moving towards the next movement. You know, I joked about when I was in Israel and I was riding third level test three and we did the extended walk and I went to pick him back up and he went backwards. And I knew that at K, I had to pick up the left lead canter and I better hurry up with it because at F, I had to start a half pass. And because right. I have ridden through the tests and know the tests, you know, I was able to get my horse back into walk. My transition was absolutely not at K, but I had that transition a little bit before C so that I was able to be in canter for a few strides before I had to pick up my half pass. Right. And I think if I didn't have that experience, I would have just gone sort of into panic mode and have been scrambling and I may not have picked up the canter. And if I didn't pick up the canter, okay, now I've gotten a bad score for backing up. I've gotten a bad score because God knows what the walk looked like. Mm-hmm. I've gotten a bad score because I didn't canter. And now I'm half passing and in what gate?
And that all goes against your collected remarks at the end as well.
Yeah. Exactly. Yeah. So I think that, you know, I think that as you move up the levels, you become more aware of all of the intricacies of test riding.
Right.
And I think that shows in the lower levels. And also the reminder that I'm a graduate of the L program. I am not a licensed judge, which means that most of what I judge is second level and below. You know, I'm not doing, I do the occasional, you know, third level, fourth level, the FEI. But that's mostly people just wanting to get ring time more than, you know, really coming out to show, so to speak.
Sure.
Before they go to a licensed show, they just want to get some ring time to clarify things. So yeah. Considering that most of what I see is second level and below, I see a lot of amateurs and I see a lot of people who are, you know, legitimately pushing the envelope, you know, asking their horses to do maybe more than they're quite ready for, but trying to get a feel for where the holes are, and using the schooling shows as an opportunity for learning to know what needs to be polished.
Right.
So, you know.
And it is in no way, you're not suggesting that amateurs should not show.
God, no.
They just need, the whole way that they get experience is to go show.
Yeah.
Go show.
And I would I love it when I will sometimes be at a show and, you know, it's somewhere that I don't know people, you know, I judge around home a lot. So I know who the trainers are, but I also judge in other areas. And every so often I'll see just a beautifully, beautifully ridden test. And I'll say to my scribe, not that it matters in the way that I judge it, because I judge everybody equally, but at the end of the ride, I'll say, is that a pro? And I'm always so thrilled when they say, no, she's one of our, you know, just one of our local riders who comes to our shows. And I'm just so thrilled that, you know, you rode so well that I thought you were a professional.
Yeah.
And it isn't about, wow, you have a 10 mover. You know, that isn't it.
It's how you handled the test. It's how you thought your way through the test.
Yep.
It was all of those little intrinsic pieces that simply come from doing it and observing it and thinking about it and planning it and doing it again.
Yep. And I love being able to say things like, you know, you got every single point that you were capable of giving. You didn't leave anything on the table. Mm. You know, none of us has ever scored a 100. Okay. We all, you know, it's not going to happen, but you know, to ride, you know, go watch some, to everybody listening, go just sit ringside or, you know, just watch some tests on YouTube. And, you know, you can tell the riders who are planning, who are riding every stride, who are riding their horses, who are riding the movements, you know, who are thoughtful in everything that they do. And you can tell the riders who are coming in and riding a pattern, or the riders who are coming in and riding their horses. And incidentally, they're making a pattern, which,
or
you
the
know,
riders that are coming in holding their breath while they hopefully remember the pattern.
Exactly. You know, so So in terms of, you know, how you present yourself to the judge, mm-hmm. present yourself professionally. I have a tendency to roll my shoulders and collapse my chest when I ride. And I had a trainer who said to me, pull your shoulders back, stick your chest out, come down centerline like you're the queen. You're coming down centerline as if you're apologizing. You come down centerline as if you belong there. And I think that that shows in a confidence level, in a sense of professionalism that judges appreciate. So that was another one of my typically long-winded answers. But I'm just, I thank the person who sent this in so much.
Yeah.
And she's asked not for me to mention her name. So that's fine. But I thank her so much for asking for the clarification. And I hope that if I ever say anything, and either you want clarification or you think, well, that's not very nice, or what the is she talking about, that you will take the time to ask, because this is all off the cuff. I don't plan my answers. I don't always know what my question is ahead of time. And I am not God. And I make mistakes. And sometimes we misspeak. So, you know, please feel free to call me on anything that you think that I have said. And on that note.
Okay. Yes, we are getting ready for our interview with Jennifer. But first, we're going to have a word from one of our several sponsors.
Is your horse suffering from digestive tract issues such as diarrhea, colic, or hindgut imbalances? Does he need a high-grain diet? Is he under stress? Nalox Advanced can help. Nalox Advanced is a scientifically formulated blend of ingredients that works synergistically to maintain a healthy stomach, small intestine, and hindgut. It contains long-acting gastric buffers and coating agents to maintain a normal stomach pH. It provides an effective probiotic to support complete digestion of starch and sugars in the foregut, helping maintain a healthy hindgut. And it supplies a broad-spectrum prebiotics to sustain a healthy balance of beneficial microbes and well-balanced microbiome. For more information, visit kppusa.com or call them at 859-873-2974. Today, Aviva and I are joined by Jennifer Mutchler of Catlett, Virginia. Jennifer is our second unsung hero. We've renamed the segment from Hometown Heroes to Unsung Heroes. And she was nominated by Sandy Mueller, a very dear student and friend of hers. Jennifer, thanks for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
So before I got to meet Jennifer, I was this many days old, Aviva had a previous association with Jennifer. Why don't you tell us about that, Aviva?
Well, I have known Jennifer for quite a few years now. I was honored to judge her in a number of schooling shows over the year and to work with her and a lot of her students, and actually know Sandy, who nominated Jennifer for this honor. But the most important thing about Jennifer that is more important than anything else you're going to hear today is that Jennifer is the one who found Tiger. And when I drove home from that horrible lesson, crying my eyes out because Leo couldn't do the work, I saw that Jennifer had posted about half leases at her farm. And I didn't think about it. And I called her and I said, would you consider a lease at my farm? And this wonderful woman said, only for you. Aww. And I went out and the rest is history. And I own a unicorn and it's all thanks to Jennifer. So she's my unsung hero too, except that I sing her praises all the time because she found my tiger, who is a unicorn. So, yeah.
I feel very blessed, and I only got to meet him once. So for you to have had him in your barn had to be a pretty special occasion.
He was pretty cool.
Yeah.
Cool. Yeah. I just feel blessed that you found each other.
He's the lucky one. You know, it's funny. I've just never had a relationship with a horse the way I have with Tiger. And, you know, it was one of those meant to be things. And I'm so grateful that you let me come out. I'm grateful that you let me lease him. And I'm mostly grateful that you let me buy him and that he can stay with me forever. So thank you. But that's neither here nor there, right? Let's talk about Jennifer.
I do think when you have a horse for sale, you know, even if they're not the most special horse in your barn, when you have a horse for sale, knowing that you're finding their final owner, that's something I love to celebrate.
I love it. You know, people ask me all the time, oh, how do you sell your horses? And this is how, you know, I have so many cool stories like this that, you know, the horses just find the perfect match. And I've turned down buyers before and said, nope, you're not the right person for this horse. So when it works, it's wonderful, you know, especially the older ones, because I don't know, I feel like I need to be their stewards, you know, because they can end up in really bad places, you know. And so whenever an opportunity like that presents itself, I always go with it, you know, because, you know, it's just so much nicer that way. And it's fun. It's really fun.
Very cool. Very cool. Well, that's going to segue us right into asking our first question, which is, how did you get involved in horses in the first place?
So my sister had a little pony, rotten pony. And
aren't they all?
Yeah. When I was three, and it would gallop and drag her around all over the place. But apparently I used to get on it and ride it, and it would buck and buck and buck, and I would laugh. And so I don't know. So that's where it started. And then from there, I started taking lessons at the age of 8. And I took lessons, you know, weekly lessons. You know, my parents weren't wealthy, so they scraped together enough money for me to take a weekly lesson. And then they finally bought me my first horse when I was 14, a little quarter horse. And, I've never been horseless since then.
Wow. And were you always dressaging, or did you start with something else?
So I started in 4-H, you know, doing hunters, jumpers, 4-H. I dabbled in Western. I even did a little bit of saddle seat, not my forte. then I got a thoroughbred mare, a young thoroughbred mare, and I thought, I'm going to event. Why not? Right.
Sure.
So I set out to event. So I took some dressage lessons from the local event rider, and that was fine. But this mare was a dirty stopper cross country. I mean, she even stopped front legs over the jump, back legs on the other side.
Oh my God.
Oh, wow. Dirty stopper. And I realized I just don't have the guts to really get a horse through that kind of stuff. And I knew I wanted to get to the top of whatever discipline I did. You know, whatever that was, I wanted to go to the top. And so I thought, I'm going to stick to dressage. Like I can maybe get to the top of that.
Yeah.
Took a bunch of years, but.
Where did you grow up, Jennifer?
In Danvers, Massachusetts, which is just outside of, northeast of Boston.
Okay.
Yeah. So I grew up right down the street from like Ledyard Farms and Hamilton Farm and all, so we had Jack LaGoff and all those big name eventing people, which is probably why I set off to be an eventer. You know, it was there. You know, you said headquarters, I think, was close by, and at the time, so it was a big thing back in the 80s, eventing in that area. So yeah, that's where I was. I moved to Virginia in 1996, to work for a warm blood breeding farm, and a dressage trainer. I've been here ever since. I did a brief stint in Delaware, but for the DuPonts, really don't know. I came back. Back to Virginia.
I'll have our momentary places that we've worked.
Yeah.
Yes.
You have achieved all three of your medals with USDF, which is that is a feat. Have you also done your freestyle bars, or have you not?
I have not done my freestyle. Oddly, I've never done a freestyle. I designed a Grand Prix freestyle for me and Roscoe. And then I ended up leasing him out. Common theme here. I leased him out, and then that gal ended up purchasing him. And
that was the end of your freestyle.
That was the end of my freestyle. So I did get to compete him at regionals at Grand Prix, but I never got to ride the freestyle. I did get Roscoe back a bunch of years later because he couldn't handle the heat in Florida. So, you know, I had stayed in touch and said, hey, if you ever need a place to semi-retire him, I'd love to have him. And so she sent him back to me, which was amazing.
Nice.
Amazing.
You've had multiple Grand Prix horses.
I have
over the years.
Yes, I've had a couple. First one I got was Jules Caracol, and Koki, as we called him, was trained in the Netherlands by Imke Bartels.
Wow.
And Jewel Court Stud owned him, and now of course Jewel Court Stud sold Jules Gold Strike to Julio Mendoza.
No kidding. Yes. Oh, wow.
Yep. Okay. Yep. So they are very, very generous people. And I just happened to stumble upon this horse, and he was older, you know, he was 18 or 19 and not the soundest at that time. But I was able to patch him back together and get him fit enough to get my silver medal on him. He was amazing. Wow. Yeah,
very cool. Very cool. Now, in addition to having many FEI horses, you've worked with quite a few big name trainers. Would you say that there was one or two people that stuck out as your most influential teachers?
So my very first real dressage trainer, Kat Hoffman, was very influential. She was very classically trained by Christina Stuckelberger and Volker Brohmann and, you know, those types. And I'll never forget my first lesson with her. She said, oh, go ahead and pick up the trot. And six strides in, she said, stop. I was like, okay. So I stopped and she said, let's start from the halt.
Oh my.
And I was like, oh my. Okay. All right. So that's where it began, at the halt. And she was really talented rider and trainer. Unfortunately, never got a big break in the business. But so she was definitely one. Another one would be Nicole Lopoff. She was one of my favorites to ride with. She would come over from Germany once or twice a year. She would vacation in July with her family and come over. Barb Strawson would host her. And I was lucky enough to ride with her for a couple of years. That was amazing. She actually watched one of my tests at Morven Park one day. And, you know, nobody recognized her. And I thought, here is this double gold Olympian, and no one even knows who she is. It's a funny, got a little bit of a funny story. I'll digress a little because it's a really funny story. She looked around, and at that time, we had just started allowing snaffles at, you know, at FEI levels here in this country. And so she looks around, and she says, why are there people in you know, shad bellies with snaffle bridles? And I said, oh, it's allowed. USEF allows snaffle bridles at FEI. And she's like, huh. She said, wow, I sure wish I could have ridden Rembrandt with that, with a snaffle. And I looked at her and I said,
I think you did all right.
And she laughed. She laughed. And she said, well, yeah, but it would have been a whole lot nicer and easier to ride him in a snaffle. So
interesting.
Anyway, that's my funny little. Wow. So, yeah, she was really great to ride with. Yep.
She had some quite classical training. She worked with Uwe Schultenbalmer, is that correct? He was her big mentor.
Yep.
What do you think in your area or just in our sport in general, what do you think are the qualities that you have as a trainer and a teacher that sets you apart from other coaches?
More than myself, really, is in my schoolmasters. As Aviva can attest, I seem to have a knack for finding these maybe a little bit older, a little bit, you know, out of shape, falling through the crack horses, and either, you know, bringing them up to a point in dressage where they're, you know, can teach people cool things, or, you know, they need to step down from a higher level. And just keeping them conditioned and in, you know, good work and allowing people to feel things that they probably have never felt before. And, you know, who knows, may never again, you know. I had an 11-year-old girl on Eli, who I'm sure Aviva has judged over the years.
Yes, I have.
and she's 11, right? She's had exactly 3 dressage lessons with me, and she's passaging around the ring on him.
Oh, you know, my God. I mean,
and she is just like, this is amazing, you know? And so how fun is that, you know?
Yeah.
Just in helping people like Sandra, you know, with their young horses, and just helping people really sort of live their dreams, you know, like my goal is when someone comes to the barn, I want them to leave in a much better place than they came at, you know, because these are amateur adults. They've got jobs and families and stress. And I want them to leave feeling like $1 million. So that's my goal. Nice. You know,
this episode is brought to you by Farnham, celebrating 80 years of trusted equine care, and Endure Gold Killer Fly and Mosquito Control, a new fly spray for horses. When your horse needs to stay focused, it helps to take flies out of the equation. Endure Gold uses brand new EPA-approved ingredients never before seen in equine care to annihilate flies, ticks, and mosquitoes. This advanced formula delivers fast knockdown and up to 14 days of fly protection you can trust. Discover fly protection with Endure Gold from Farnham.
Well, you are so gracious with your horses. I have judged a lot of your students, and I know a lot of your students who have had the opportunity to ride some amazing horses. And, you know, one of the things that Sandy said about you, she said so many nice things. I have to tell our listeners, she sent like a 5-page nomination of why Jennifer was the greatest thing since sliced bread. but a few of the things that she talked about, she talked about how classically trained you were and how correct you were. She talked about your kindness, both to your students and to their horses. She talked about your ability to work with Dutch harness horses, because she has a young Dutch harness horse, and they're, as I can attest, they are tricky. And you've had some wonderful, wonderful success with yours over the last couple of years, Jennifer. But one of the other things that she talked about was that you made her feel welcome in the sport, because there's a lot of body shaming in our sport, and we are not all 5'10", willowy, blonde, legs from here to eternity riders. And I'm one of those not 5'8", willowy, blonde people, and nor are you, and nor is Sandy. And you have never made her feel body shamed. And you are also a role model that you don't have to be the perfect body to be a fabulous rider, to be a successful rider. Mm-hmm. And I think that our listeners need to hear that, because too often we do see the perfect horses and the perfect riders. And we tend to forget about the not perfect, but successful.
Well, and so many people are afraid to put themselves out there, you know, mm-hmm. especially with social media and all. It's you know, you have to have a tough skin sometimes to put yourself out there. I just tuned it out, you know, kind of like Boyd Martin just laughs stuff off all the time. He says, you know, all the hate, and I just do my thing, you know. I'm like, hey, I'm not going to judge because, you know, skinny people, 5'10", they have their issues too. They have their problems in life, and, you know, we're all in this together. And just go out there and do the best you can. You know, I've seen heavy riders that ride with a light feather touch, and I've seen feather light riders ride really heavy. And
yes,
you know, so I don't judge, you know, and as far as myself, I do the best I can, you know, I do the best for the horses and the best that I can do.
Well, yeah. it's making an impact on people. And that is amazing. Mm-hmm.
And it does sadden me, you know, because I get quite a few people that come here and they say that they have been turned away. They've been seriously body shamed by other trainers. It is a thing. And it astounds me, you know. You know, it's fine if you need, you know, if you need to have weight limits or whatever on your horses, there's no problem with that. But you don't have to make people feel bad about it, you know.
Right. Right. And this sport is hard enough without making people feel worse about themselves.
Right.
Without a doubt. So that's you helping your students and you helping your students' horses. What about for you? What do you have when you look at your future in this business? Do you have some goals? Do you have aspirations for yourself?
Always. I just probably within the last 10 years finally gave up my Olympic dream. But I really, when I was a kid and even into my 20s, I thought I would really love to make a team, even Pan Am Games or something, you know. But that just wasn't meant to be, which is fine. But I still, I'd love to get out there and compete on another Grand Prix horse, you know, do regionals, maybe do nationals, show at Devon, you know, dressage at Devon.
Yeah.
That's sort of my mini Olympics, I guess you could call it. Mm-hmm. So that's my goal. Other than that, I just love the training. I am so obsessed with horses and dressage. It's probably unhealthy. I love training. And I love being around them. I just love it. So,
well, and you do so many things with horses. I mean, you buy horses, you sell horses, you breed horses, you train horses, you teach other people how to ride horses. Is there one of those hats that you prefer over all of the others?
I love it all. breeding horses was my passion for a long while. You know, to, you know, try and breed my next Olympic hopeful, if you will.
Yeah.
I love that. I love, you know, matching up the mare to the stallion and staying up on full watch all night. I'm nocturnal anyway. You know, watching a foal take their first breath. That is amazing. Mm-hmm. Let me tell you, I actually had a couple students here one night. They stayed for dinner, and my mare went into labor. And I said, "Oh, come out to the barn. You know, we got to watch this." And so she had the foal, and I said, "Everybody stop and wait and listen." and that foal took its first breath, and their faces were like, oh my God. Because how often do you get to see that? Wow. You know, we often see end of life, but not beginning. So anyway, yeah, it's fun.
You have mostly sold the horses that you've bred, though. Although I have to say, the first time that I ever met you was at a schooling show that I judged, and you were riding Pixie Sticks.
Mm-hmm.
Remember that? It was Pixie Sticks, and that was, and she was a homebred, and you rode a beautiful third level test, and that was the first time I ever met you. She was one that you kept, though.
Yes, my husband. I don't want to say force because it's an hardship, but he said, no, you're not selling this one. And people would come to look at horses and he would stand in front of her stall door and say, not this one. Not. He literally would. Literally. And I did. I started her under saddle. I brought her up to, I showed her at BLM finals at fourth level. I took her to a schooling show, Mitchell Dressage show that winter. She was 7 or 8, just turning 8, I guess. And I showed her pre-St. George, and she got like a 70% or something. And then she contracted Lyme's disease. And so we treated that, and we were almost to the end of that. And that said, oh, let's give her a round of Dex to kind of just push her over the finish line. And I had two of the most amazing rides on her that I had ever had. And then she foundered from the Dex.
Oh, such a heartbreak.
Yeah.
She was so special. She was so special.
Amazing. Amazing. I remember I rode with Michael Barrison for many years. And he said to me, it was when we were working on third level, working flying changes. And he had, he used to have this award, you know, he called it the Tiara Award for his best student. And I won that award that weekend. And he said to me,
awesome.
He said, I know, right? So he said to me, Jen, if you qualify for the Olympics, but you fall off a ladder and you can't ride, and you need me to ride your horse at the Olympics, I will, but I will not show her under the name Pixie Sticks. And I just thought that was so funny. I was like, all right. I mean, it was cool that he even mentioned Olympics and Pixie Sticks together, right?
Yeah, really.
But,
But that would have been priceless to see a big dude like that coming in. And now we see so-and-so on Pixie Sticks.
On Pixie Sticks. Yeah, we have a candy. We had a candy theme for the foals. So we had Starburst and Snickers and Pixie Sticks and all these Toblerone, all these candy names.
Oh, nice.
And now you're looking more at breeding the Dutch harness horses, yeah?
Yeah.
Yeah, I like the crosses. As you know, the full Dutch harness horse can be a little too harnessy. But I do like the crosses. So I have a couple of those now that are Gowdy is one stallion that crosses really nice with them. So I have two Gowdy fillies out of Dutch harness mares. And that seems to work really well. I'm really excited to start. One is 4 and she's just getting going under saddle. And then the other one is a yearling and I'm really looking forward to working with them.
So exciting.
I have a Dutch harness Danish cross.
Ah, nice.
And so it's my first Dutch harness experience.
Okay.
But he actually puts his nose down on the ground to trot in the canter all on his own. So, they're very interesting horses. They really are. They are
very alert and they're little worker bees. They tend to be pretty clever and, they are bred to work.
Yes.
So yeah, I've really enjoyed them. Some of them
horse that likes a job.
Yes, absolutely. Absolutely. Yep.
Last question.
Yeah.
What do you feel makes a really good student? Is there a specific type of student that you like to work with more? What really gets your blood going when you're teaching somebody?
Anyone that wants to learn, really. Anyone that's willing to just sort of try and learn and do their best and just enjoy the process, you know. I tell people all the time, enjoy the ride, you know. What a privilege to be able to do this. And just, you know, I mean, we'll be riding around and I'll be like, wow, look at that sunset. And the people look at me like, that? What are you talking about? You know, enjoy the ride, you know, look up, look around. They get so focused and intense it's fun. But yeah, anyone, I love my amateur adults. But then like that 11-year-old kid doing passage on Eli, I mean, that was such a trip.
And to be able to provide an opportunity like that, that's just mind blowing. She'll never
do this. I'm kind of jealous.
I know, right? Everyone should come have a lesson on Eli.
Well, I remember the first time I met Eli, and trust me, I was not taking a lesson on him then.
No.
Remember that
not.
Lesson?
No.
He's come a long way.
Yeah, he's he's a special snowflake.
Yeah.
But he's happier now that he's doing Grand Prix, oddly, because I feel like he realizes, like, there's nothing else. Like, he was always so worried. He worries about everything, and he was always so worried about, oh, my God, what is she going to ask me to do next? And now it's like, that's it, buddy. Those are the movements. And he's like, yeah. Oh, thank God, you know. And he'll teach him to anyone. Yeah, we can do this. I mean, he's great.
Well, Jennifer, we so appreciate you taking time out of your day to join us. And our thanks to Sandy Mueller for introducing us to you and introducing all of us to you.
Thank you. It was fun. It was a lot of fun.
We enjoyed
it. And Sandy's wonderful. I'm just, what an honor to be nominated. Really made my day.
I'm almost tempted to read to everybody what she wrote, but it would take us too long.
It was amazing.
She sent it to me because I know her, you know, and I've been honored to teach her the one time. And then she sent me this, and I started reading, and it kept going, and it kept going. And it kept going, and I scrolled down and I couldn't find the end of it, and it kept going. And it was just, for somebody to take the time to put all of that down and to find an outlet to say all of that is really a tribute to you. It says a lot about you. And it certainly does make you a hero. So thank you for joining us and letting us actually, you know, talk about what a hero you are.
I'm just doing my job, enjoying the horses and the people. For somebody. It was really special. Really special to hear, you know, to know that I could affect somebody that positively. You know, that was, again, that's my goal.
Yeah.
That's just my goal. Yep. So awesome. Yeah.
I think you've hit the goal for the day.
Yeah.
Thanks for joining us.
Thank you.
Good to see you, Jennifer. And
you too,
and again,
Aviva.
Thank you for my unicorn.
Aww. give him a big pat for me.